It's a really good football team that's going to come here ready to play and ready to win.
That's Patriots defensive back Daron Harmon, who says he isn't taking anything for granted as the Jaguars come to town for the AFC Championship game. But how close will it be? It's Tuesday, January 16th. I'm Chad Finn. Chris Gasper is on assignment. Welcome to Season Ticket. Boston Globe sports columnist Dan Shaughnessy is here. Welcome, Dan.
Welcome. It's nice to be here, Chad. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm just looking at your column in the morning Boston Globe here. Headline, Cakewalk continues with Jaguars. You do not deviate from the headline in the
right.
column.
There are times when what's underneath the headline does not reflect what the headline says.
Yes,
this
there
is
are.
Not one of those times.
Right.
And that's how I feel. Hey, this could be a game. We can always make a case it could be a game. I think more so than the Titan game last week. Oh, and by the way, on the Titan game, if you heard Rob Ninkovich yesterday on another radio station, he said that the Titans weren't even a playoff team. Now, Rob Ninkovich is not a Patriot hater. He is not trying to diminish the Deeds.
He is an expatriate, a recent expatriate.
Yes, recent guy who just came out and said that wasn't even a playoff team, and it wasn't. So it's not us, you know, trying to somehow diminish the Deeds of the Patriots. You know, this is the fact. This just happens to be the easiest path to a Super Bowl that I've ever seen, I believe, in history. Not their fault. They earned it. They got the 13-3. Let's just state that all that. That said, Chad, I hope you're not going to be in this chair any more days after today, because it would be impossible to talk about this game more than 1 or 2 days. I just don't know what people are going to do trying to get into the X's and O's of this. So when you ask me, can they win? Yes, the other team can always win the game. So we know that's a possibility. The Patriots fumble the opening kickoff. You get some goofy turnovers. It becomes a rock fight. And I don't know, the Jags defense does its job. The Jags defense, in my view, most of those games when they shut people down were against the Cleveland Browns and terrible teams. The Jags defense just gave up 42 points to Roethlisberger.
People are overlooking that.
459 yards in the air. Now, they had some circus catches, the whole thing. But how good can they be? Now they got to stop Tom Brady in Foxborough, and he's got all of his weapons. So I'm not optimistic about the Jags defense.
Okay, back to your first point
yes.
here about it being the easiest path. I look back through Pro Football Reference, since the beginning of this era, the Tom Brady, Bill Belichick era, starts with a snowball in 2001.
Sure, that was a pretty good Raider team.
That's where it begins. I tried to find a path that was this easy to counter you. There hasn't been one, especially at this level. In the AFC Championship game against a quarterback of the, whatever the opposite of magnitude is, that's what Blake Bortles is. But you touched on it a little bit. They do have some positive things going for them.
Oh,
it's
sure.
a young defense with some pretty high-end guys, Jalen Ramsey, Miles Jack, guys who were first-round picks and had decorated college careers. There's something to this team, right? It's just not that it's probably that their time isn't here yet.
Yeah, I think it's just amazing to me that you can have the conference championship and this is the representative. And I think that this is part of the Patriots' good fortune. The Jacksonville Jaguars deserve to be here because they beat all the teams in their way, and they are here. That said, we know the teams that would have given the Patriots more trouble and would have stood up and not been humiliated the way the Titans were last Saturday. And those teams are the Kansas City Chiefs, the Baltimore Ravens, the Pittsburgh Steelers. In my view, you don't get that kind of a game with those kinds of teams. And we can go back and just extract the elite quarterbacks that are not here. It's just not as likely to happen. Neophyte coach, new quarterback, scared guys, lose their minds, and give up 35 straight points in a non-competitive game. That's what worries me about this game, because it's the exact same formula of ingredients coming into Foxborough Sunday, and I just can't make a case for it. There's no Joe Flacco who's not afraid of him, or Harbaugh who's not afraid of him. Coughlin is the one guy, and we can get to that when you want to, but he's not, unless he rips
in a booth.
Yeah, unless he rips the headset off of Marone, he's not going to be able to help him once the game starts.
But you look at that Jacksonville defense, and people who know it better than certainly we do have seen it more often than a few times this year look at it and say, well, they have some of the similarities to those Giants defenses that beat the Patriots. They can get after Brady up the middle.
Good.
Good defensive backs. Ramsey's a terrific young player and seems to be one of the budding superstar talker of current NFL, which the league needs more of. But it seems like they have some pieces for that recipe, some of the ingredients for that recipe that has given Tom Brady trouble.
Right.
If we
look back, when Rex Ryan used to be able to do it occasionally because he had some personality, he kind of knew what he was doing with that. And obviously Coughlin did it too in both Super Bowls. But, you know, at Denver, when they had the personnel to bother Brady, and they did it at home, more likely, harder to do in Gillette. But what Tennessee did to just play straight coverage, they're down linemen, whatever they are, They didn't touch him all day. I mean, it was. I compared it to, you know, touch football at the Kennedy compound. Like, Tom would just drop back, look around, which guy does he want? I mean, he was not touched all day. Not one sack. He was barely hit after the throws.
He hits the deck when they're near now, too.
Oh, my goodness. He does. Of course, and I don't blame him. If you try to do that, they will just surgically annihilate you, and that's what happened to Tennessee. So, yes, I hope that, like you say, it's not a straight blitz thing, and again, I'm not a football X's and O's guy, but a way to mix up the coverages so you can come up the middle and bother him, even if you have to, and again, I'm not advocating this, if you want to bother him, take a cheap shot after the whistle, you know, and just make...
That was what the Broncos did.
Take a penalty,
yeah.
Because you've got to send the message and just get him off his game. Otherwise, he will kill you, as he did the Titans and as he will do the Jags.
So why don't more teams do that? Why aren't they vicious 70s Oakland Raiders?
Yeah,
of stuff.
I mean, even Miami does a little bit because they've got 30 players.
Two, right, yeah.
and you know, they get angry and they get dirty and they get chippy. And they beat the Patriots, by the way. So, yeah, I don't know why. I'm not a football guy, like I always say. But I can see a lot of these things, and it just annoys me when people come in and somehow expect, it's the definition of insanity, do the same thing and expect a different outcome. It's not going to change.
Is it intimidation? Is that yes. a significant factor yes. in all this, especially with a team like the Titans? Because I think Jacksonville, at least looking at the way they conduct themselves yeah. and what they just did going into Pittsburgh and beating that team there, maybe they won't be intimidated. Is there a possibility of that?
Well, that's a good sign. You're right about that. But I think everything changes here. Until otherwise proven, I'm a doubter that anybody can do that because it just hasn't been done out of nowhere. I mean, you can go back when Mangini's Jets came in, but he knew some things. He was Mangini. He had worked here. Rex Ryan, I always thought, you know, had a little bit of the formula there. And Harbaugh, that's just the way those guys are wired. They're not afraid of people. They push back. They get angry. And you need a little bit of that fight and tiger in you. You can't just come in all in awe of Bill Belichick. Like, yeah, oh, we love these guys. We're so impressed with them, you know, and then you just come in and roll over for them.
Right. Well, you did cite one example or one team that had some success unexpectedly against the Patriots. That was the Rex Ryan Jets
yep.
in the 2010 playoffs. Patriots 14-2 that year. End the season with 8 consecutive wins the regular season.
Including?
45-3 in week 13 over the Jets. Yeah. I think all of us thought it was going to be a repeat of that. And the Jets won 28-26, and it was sort of the formula you mentioned earlier in your scenario, the slim scenario where the Jaguars could win, which is Brady throws an interception early, couple of things go wrong, the team builds confidence by hanging in there early. That's what happened in that Jets game. Brady threw a pick to David Harris. All of a sudden, everybody was like, uh-oh, maybe this isn't going to go the way the last one did.
Yeah, they're sitting over there right now going, oh, my gosh. Somebody's got to make a play to stop this drive.
That last run, in fact, again, they pushed the pile for the first. And the pass is picked off. It's picked off by David Harris, who gets away from Brady. What a turn of
it was a miracle, the fact that it was so close on the heels of the game that had been the rout just a few weeks earlier. And we were laughing at them as we are laughing at the Titans and the Jags. So, yes, but I think Rex Ryan brought something to the table. We'll see if Coughlin can transfer this to his coach and they can do these kinds of things. And like you say, a little bit of an attitude, a little bit of chip, that's a good thing to bring in here.
Do you think the Coughlin thing's real? I mean, he's had more success against the Patriots than just the Super Bowls. It wasn't the Belichick era, but
right.
knocked him out of the playoffs a couple of times in the late 90s. Clearly has had 2 games that are probably going to put him in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the 2 Super Bowl victories, especially the one against the 18-0 Patriots in 2007. Is that a real thing, that he has some sort of edge over Belichick in some mental way or something like that?
Well, he's not intimidated by him. Again, when they worked for Bill Parcells at the Giants at Meadowlands, it used to be a running joke who'd get there earlier. And Parcells, just as a joke, would call the office on Christmas Day and see which guy would pick up. You know, and it was just like
they're fighting over the
competition.
Phone.
He had nicknames. I think he called him Gloom and Doom. I think Belichick
yes.
was Gloom.
He could be either.
But Coughlin is not afraid of Bill Belichick. They worked together all those years, and he knows him, and he's not going to be intimidated by the aura of Bill. And he's also 71 years old. He's an adult. He's beaten him in 2 Super Bowls. So he knows things, and he can teach this to his coach, and his coach teach to the players. But like we said, once the game starts, he's a 71-year-old man up in the executive box who's not able to help them. I do think it's good to have his input during the week.
Does he be up there pounding his fists on the
yeah.
press box tables?
Face
like,
all red, like me.
Bill Polian? Remember him having a few
no
tantrums?
No one gets quite as animated as Polian during those games. He's throwing stuff around. We always know he's there.
Yes, you do. You always know he's there. I'm wondering if it's because Coughlin knew Belichick back in the day that maybe he is not intimidated to that degree that some of the younger coaches are. Maybe Doug Marrone's one of those coaches is intimidated. Certainly Mike Mularkey, who's now out of work, looked intimidated, and he's never beaten Tom Brady. But perhaps it's just that Coughlin knows who Belichick really is.
Right. I mean, the advantage the Patriots have had, it's growing by the days and by the years here. So you go in with a 10-12-point edge just because of the coaching disparity, and we've seen that. You saw in those playoff games over the weekend. People make stupid mistakes all over the place, and Belichick, by and large, does not. He doesn't waste challenge flags. He manages the clock. He gets a chance to score at the end of the first half every game. He does not kick it through the end zone like everybody else. It's like stuff that's just fundamental stuff that he does, and I don't know why they don't pick it up.
But maybe it's hard. I mean, maybe that's just the thing. Yeah. You ask yourself who the second-best coach in the NFL is. Mike Tomlin would have had an argument until Sunday, and then you go back and look, and the Steelers fell a round or two short of where they always say they're going to go again. They have arguably the best roster, most high-end talent in the league, and yet they underachieve and underachieve. And this is the guy who might be next after Belichick on that list. What is it with the NFL's inability to find coaches who are just competent?
I think that's an acute problem, man. It's just amazing. You watch these games, and hindsight, and you know, we have the advantage of seeing things from the press box or the couch, whatever, but some of this clock management and just decisions that are made, and Tomlin had some whoppers, that they're just not good, and there's no reason for them.
It's going to be really interesting to see how this all plays out. I'm with you. I think it is a blowout, but I do have respect for the Jaguars. I think they're that next team that is going to attempt to challenge the Patriots. I just don't know if they're ready for this scenario right now.
Blake Bortles cannot come in to Foxborough and win a playoff game, and I start and end with that. It's just impossible.
That might be the bottom line there. After the break, we'll talk more with Dan Shaughnessy about the Patriots-Jaguars AFC Championship game. Because we have Dan here, we'll also talk about the Red Sox offseason moves, or lack of them anyway. Stay with us. Welcome back. If you like season tickets, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode as soon as it's available. Back now with Dan Shaughnessy, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this Patriots-Jaguars matchup. Dan, you managed to get a reference into your column, Sun Tzu. That's pretty good, but the line is, if you wait by the river long enough, the bodies of your enemies will float by. How does that apply to the Patriots?
It totally applies to the Patriots. It should be right there with Do Your Job and Next Man Up and all their other T-shirt slogans, along with Napoleon's Never Interrupt Your Enemy When He's Making a Mistake. I mean, that's the Patriots' mantra. That's how they live by. And one thing is to just stand there and wait for everybody else to get hurt and get killed off and get lose and the whole thing so that you end up with a Final Four with Nick Foles and Blake Bortles and Case Keenum with Tom Brady. So that happens. Happens when you have the dead bodies of, you know, Alex Smith, Eli Manning,
Roethlisberger,
Stafford, over the weekend, Ryan, Roethlisberger, Breeze, all taken out. All teams, all quarterbacks, elite quarterbacks to a degree or whatever, guys who have beat the Patriots or aren't going to be afraid of them or overwhelmed by the moment, they're all gone. And you're left with these guys now. So yes, the Sun Tzu theory of just standing there and letting people just get killed off has worked nicely for the Pats. Not their fault, but it has happened.
Does this mean maybe it's not a quarterback league like we think it is? Or it,
I think it's some aberration, Chad. I don't believe that. I
just
think,
this year,
yes,
just a weird year.
I don't think anyone's going to try and build without a quarterback. So the notion that you got three of the Final Four with these guys, and we know Carson Wentz got hurt. That happened. I can't account for the Bortles is their guy. It's his fourth year here. He has, by the way, one interception per game in his career. 64 games, 64 interceptions. His completion percentage is under 60%. There's a whole Twitter account dedicated to mocking him, and this predates this season. I mean, it's just like Blake Bortles. It's not his fault. Seems like a very nice young man, and he has managed the game. But he threw for like 69 yards against the Bills. The rock fight against the Bills, again, that's
the worst football game I've ever seen that called itself a playoff,
and
quote unquote.
That's how they got here, and the Patriots beat the Bills 60-19 in two games this year. I won't even get into the fact that as bad as the Titans were, they beat the Jags twice. Has anybody even mentioned that? I mean, I could just go on and on here with the piling on. Sorry.
I think that's a pretty good case right there that backs up your column. But Bortles kind of has that Trent Dilfer thing. If you're looking for a situation where a team has succeeded in spite of its quarterback. The 2000 Ravens won the Super Bowl. Yep. Dilfer, that's the line everybody cites. Sanchez for that 2010 Jets team.
Hosteller is filling in for Sims. They won a Super Bowl. They had a pretty good team.
Belichick probably remembers that one pretty good. Yeah, pretty well. Yeah. Sometimes it does happen,
sure.
But it's not going to happen now.
I don't think that it's just – to me, it's impossible. It would take some quirky things – and like I said, fumbles, turnovers is something you can never account for. But it looks like we're going to have pretty good weather on Sunday. And I just think the Patriots, they don't turn the ball over. They're careful. And there will be some challenge that Bill needs to make sure that they don't get ahead of themselves here. But they've not demonstrated that they're that kind of a group. So I think he's secure in that. As long as they take care of business, this should be pretty easy for them.
Take care of business and keep Brady upright, because Brian Hoyer, Blake Bortles, and you won the AFC Championship game. I would talk about the Patriots, who are going to be presumably playing onward after this weekend. Move on to the Red Sox, who haven't done anything all winter. What's going on with them? Why hasn't anything happened in terms of filling the needs that they have? They were pretty obvious at the end of the season. They need a middle of the lineup hitter. J.D. Martinez is still out there. Hosmer's still out there, if that's somebody you're interested in, and yet nothing has happened. What is this?
Yeah, it's an interesting offseason for them in that nothing has happened, as you say. They changed the manager, which was right away. They did that. We all knew it was going to happen during the World Series, and then they announced the new guy. They trotted out the new guy, Alex Cora. People are rooting for him. Good luck. Since then, the only thing they've done is they've changed the craft beer of the Red Sox, and they've re-signed Mitch Moreland, and that's pretty much it. It is a 93-win team. 2 years, 93 wins, two division titles back-to-back. What, unfortunately, is two things are happening. The other teams ahead of them are getting better. And we know that Houston got better. They just got Cole there. And we know the Yankees, my God, got better, bringing in Stanton and the things they've done. Cleveland's, I think, better than the Red Sox, so... You start off with that. It doesn't always go the way, ever go the way we think it's going to go.
At best, the fourth best team.
On paper, they go in with that, and that's that. The other thing is, Chad, I think that they're falling behind locally in terms of the interest of the fans and a talking point and conversations and shows like ours. It's like it's just hard to drum up a lot. This week's the baseball writers' dinner on Thursday at the Copley Marriott, and it's not a great head table. I don't know that there's going to be that many people who want to attend the event and drum up interest in baseball at a time when people are crazed about the Patriots, rightfully so, and the Celtics, in my view, have vaulted over the Red Sox in terms of popularity with the local fans. Now, the Sox are out of season. We'll see where that goes once they fire up. And, you know, we get back from the Super Bowl, and a week later, we go to Fort Myers. And
right.
Maybe some interest will be drummed up then. In terms of not addressing their needs, I don't know whether this is collusion. They're worried about luxury tax threshold. It's a standoff with Scott Boras. But the J.D. Martinez thing, I can't even talk or read about it anymore. Nothing has happened. It feels like he's going to start the season either going back where he came from or just sitting out. And I don't know which, but the notion that the Sox will go to 5 years on him, that he wants seven, I understand their reluctance to go seven on this guy. And I'm not convinced that he's not some sort of a – artificially inflated aberration of where he has played.
He's a late bloomer, at least.
Yeah, his track record is curious, to say the least. So I wouldn't go 7 years on him either. They did win 93 games. They have a very strong core. And if they get the pitching that I think they're going to get, especially their starters, they could be really, really good. But no one's talking about them. And if nothing else, they just got to create a little bit of buzz, you would think.
I'm going to be a total hypocrite about this, but I like that they've been in the stare down with Boras on this guy, because I don't think he has many other options unless Arizona clears space to bring him back, and we haven't seen any indications of that. The Giants were a place that maybe his agent was floating as a landing spot, but they acquired Andrew McCutchen, probably not an outfield spot for him there. So I think Boston is far away as best scenario. It's just a staring contest waiting to see if the Sox go to 6 years or 7 years even, or Martinez comes here for what they've already offered. But if it works out, I'm okay with the way it's gone down. But if it doesn't work out, you got to wonder what the heck plan B is with the Red Sox, because they need a guy like this, even with his quirky career. They don't have – do we want to go into the season watching Hanley Ramirez batting cleanup again for these guys?
Yeah, it's the same thing you ended up with. And oddly enough, Hanley was one of their best hitters in the playoffs, but we know the graph on him, and you don't know who's going to show up from day to day. Can't rely on that. But I think they have decided, unless they get the deal they want to get, they're going to go in as is and be confident that that'll be good enough. And you know what? It's possible that they are right. It's more of a PR battle at this point. That it's going to be hard for them to convince fans who are just a little bit tired of the non-action, not that wild about the team, and just other teams around here just being far more creative and exciting.
They need the cleanup hitter, obviously,
yeah,
more than anything else. But I'm I got questions about that pitching staff. Chris Sale needs to get paid at some point, first of all. So they're going to have to lock him up. They're paying David Price an exorbitant amount of money for what he's been so far. I'm not sure Drew Pomerantz is going to be 1988 Bruce Hurst again. Eduardo Rodriguez can't stay healthy. Steven Wright, we don't even know what he is at this point. Porcello is average. Biggest fluke Cy Young Award winner we're probably ever going to see. I wish they could go out and get another starting pitcher, but because of the money they have committed elsewhere and the need that they have in the middle of that lineup, they can't do it. And you see Darvish rumors to the Yankees. That's going to put them a whole stratosphere above the Red Sox.
Yeah, that would be bad for Boston. That's the kinds of things, you know, you don't want to play defense by keeping people from going to other places, but the Sox can't afford to have Machado go to the Yanks, and they can't afford to have Darvish go to the Yanks. I would agree with that totally.
And I feel like they're going to need that depth start. I mean, we even saw it last year, a guy like Kyle Kendrick getting turns in the rotation.
Yep.
Before that, Sean O'Sullivan, people like that.
Bring back Doug Fister. Too bad he's already signed.
Yeah, Doug Fister got a job. He was one of the hot free agents of this offseason, I guess. But
you will hear the word collusion as the weeks go on here with Hosmer sitting there and these guys, because it's looking a little weird.
Is this 87 Tim Raines?
Either they all got smart at the same time, or they passed the memo. I'm sure there's no fingerprints around there this time, but I think that nationwide you're just seeing a lot of reluctance. That's why the Giant thing was interesting. They've been active.
Yeah, they have been active and acquired a player who's getting paid pretty well in McCutchen. But we'll see what happens with Martinez. I still feel pretty good about him coming back to the Red Sox. The other thing that I wonder why they haven't done sort of secondary stuff. Addison Reed signed a two-year $17 million contract for the Twins. That's a lot of money in the real world. Going rate for a quality relief pitcher, that's a steal. Why weren't the Red Sox in on bringing this guy back and building from the bullpen out like so many teams are doing nowadays?
I know. It's a good question. I think they knew they weren't going to go there. They thought it was overpaying for what they were getting. They had him here.
That's like a month of David Price.
Yeah, well, to your point, Nunez. I mean, what's the story with Nunez? You know, everybody's hero. He's still out there, too. And now you got Pedroia saying he's going to play second base and opening day and all that sort of thing.
Oh, is he saying that? I missed that.
He said it to another radio station last week that he expects to be ready for the opener. And that would, you know, that would change things in the infield a little bit, too.
Well, they got to protect Pedroia from himself if that's the case. You look at his career, when he's hurt and he plays, he's not productive. And they got to make sure they get him right now. And if it means missing a month or two, they got to do that. But nobody wants to see Marco Hernandez or Brock Holt as the everyday second baseman either.
Could be Lynn Sanity, you know. There's a lot of ways to go there.
Well, we got about a week out of that last year, right? do you think they do anything here before we get to the Super Bowl and before people actually look at the Red Sox and say that's the same group we saw last year?
You're going to like fast forward, like blow out the Jags, go to Minneapolis, have the parade, and like a few days after the duck boats go by, it's going to be truck day here, and everybody's going to go, hey, what'd the Red Sox do? Oh, nothing. Well, good luck to them.
Maybe that's how it's going to be, another 93-win boring team, and they fall behind the Bruins in terms of popularity.
Well, this team, the Red Sox.
Bruins are good, you know.
Well, that's something. That's a whole other show for a whole other day, but I will say this about the Red Sox. You know, the way they finished the last 2 years kind of negates anything they do. Folks are going to be wait and see. You know, we're not going to get invested in these guys until we see what they can do in the playoffs, because 2 years in a row, they've just finished really badly, lost 6 out of 7 games, and even with that, finished badly in late September and left a bad taste both years. So they need to kind of grow the product this year and play well in October in order to get people back on their side.
Well, it's too much wait and see already. It's been a whole winter of wait and see with these guys. Fortunately, as you predict, probably correctly, the Patriots are going to have very little trouble with the Jaguars.
No problem.
The Celtics and Bruins have their the secondary teams, but the Red Sox need to wake up and get active here pretty soon.
Hope so.
Dan, thanks for coming on Season Ticket. That was a good talk about a couple of teams heading in different directions.
Always a pleasure. See you guys.
That's it for this edition of Season Ticket, a production of the Boston Globe and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. If you've enjoyed the show, please tell a friend and leave us a review. I'm Chad Finn. We'll see you tomorrow.